Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, and welcome to this week's Snugcast. I'm your host, DJ Walsh, as always, joined by my co-host, Owen Tabb. And we've got a cracking podcast lined up for you this week. Owen, how are you getting on?
I'm good, yeah. Yeah, I had a good old day, rearranged at my wedding. And and I also got the missus to cut my hair as well. It feels like I'm back in April there, fucking last year. So yeah, no, pretty good day. Productive.
It's more productive than my day, I'd say, to be quite honest with you. If you can manage to rearrange your wedding and got your hair cut by your missus, far more productive than my day. Absolutely. And we're here on Friday evening and we've got a great guest lined up this week. We've got someone on the podcast who I'm absolutely delighted to have on, because I'm really eagerly anticipating the arrival of two sweatshirts next week from a fantastic new website, a new shop that's been set up recently. That is a shop that absolutely epitomizes everything that we love about Ireland's local brewing, local produce, sustainability, everything that you could talk about that we support. And if there's one thing I love, Owen, it's a good t-shirt or a good sweatshirt with a nice decent logo on it that just tells someone to fuck off, that this is what I'm about. So we're delighted to be joined this week by Shane from Craft Beer Tees. Shane, how are you getting on?
Not sure any mighty lads, how are you both?
Good, 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 kid. Great to have you on.
Fucking delighted to be here.
we just have to point out that Shane is in a man-made man shed out the back, and it looks absolutely quality. Like, well, actually, over the past year, really, we've gotten a few photos and stuff like sent to us on email or social media or whatever, from people who've built their like man sheds and bars out the back, and like they all look absolutely phenomenal. People like installing lines and everything out the back, like it's class the stuff that people have done. But I need to go see these. Like, also shout out to all the she beans around the country. It looks like the guards have been missing out. Like,
they've got their own she beans.
Yeah,
I can honestly say, Owen, it's the best one. The best thing was putting together a proper man cave with a bit of space from the world. I have two young kids and we have a hectic work life, my dear wife and I. And just to have a spot where I can go out and
go on, careful now, careful now.
and it's good buzz. I highly recommend it for everybody, men and women of all kinds.
She sheds, is it?
That's it.
She said, "I had
there's a
sorry. Go on, DJ.
No, I was going to say that I've been listening to a podcast lately. It's a rewatch of The U.S. Office, and it's Angela Kinsey and Jenna Fisher, who played Angela and Pam in The Office. And Angela records the podcast now in her shed out the back, and they call it her. That's what she said. which I think is a brilliant name.
That's quality.
Very good. I never mentioned to you earlier, but we've solar panels on the house, and I've actually got a feed off it that I use to power the shed.
Oh, class.
Indeed. And then obviously I'm tapped into the mains for this time of the evening.
That's unreal. Jesus, you're self-sufficient.
Absolutely.
Do you have a vegetable patch out the back or anything?
Well, actually, there's one for you. So when the world fell apart there in March, a dear friend of mine, he'd been doing a bit of bar work. He was actually in 57 the headline, one of the finest bars in the country. He was doing a bit of bar work there. Anyway, long story short, after a few months of sitting at home doing absolutely nothing, he was chatting to me one day, and where we've moved to, I'm out in kind of Dublin West. I'm kind of quite close to the Facebook data center on the border with Clonee. But anyway, long story short, we've a bit of a garden, and it was getting a bit wild. So he said to me, he actually trained as a horticulturalist. And so he said to me, I'd love to come out and just do a bit of work just for the sake of doing work, you know. So I said, Jesus, come on out. So he came out. Long story short, I've a caravan that I acquired from a gentleman who I did some work for last year. To preface that, I come from the festival events industry, and we did some work for a gentleman. He couldn't pay, and he gave us a caravan.
Wow, oh, that's unbelievable.
So my dear friend Alan has now moved into the caravan full time. He moved out of his other house. He's now living with us here, and he built a polytunnel about 3 months ago. He's put together a strawberry patch, full on veg patch, and the idea is in time we should be able to grow our own stuff here. That's the aim.
That's unreal. Yeah, there's definitely been a big move for that, isn't there? Like, I'm planning on doing just a few boxes and stuff out the back there as well, like just to do like there's a story of, like, well, a few years ago I was living in this like small little not even a few years ago a year and a half ago I was living in this small what's it called, terraced house,
little townhouse.
In Waterford. Yeah, little townhouse in Waterford, and out the back I had like literally like a strip. I'd say it was a foot by 6 or 7 feet long, just along the back garden. And oh my god, the courgettes I grew in it, like, these were absolute whoppers. Like, they were insane. Like, I was like, I don't think I'd eaten a courgette before, like, but I was like, oh, what's handy to grow, like, you know, bought a few seeds. Didn't take care of them at all. Just fucked them in the ground. And these things are, like, they could have won prizes, I'd say. I've never seen things as big in my life. They're so good.
There's I wouldn't be green-fingered at all.
In the history of gardening.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be green-fingered at all, but there's tremendous satisfaction out of growing something yourself and eating it. It's a strange feeling.
Yeah, no, there definitely is. Yeah.
So my friend Alan here, he picked a lot of, so there's a lot of elderberries around here, and he picked a lot of elderberries, made it into an elderberry syrup, mixed it with some brandy. I had a taste of it last night. I swear to goodness, it's velvet, absolute velvet. And just the fact that it was kind of made here on our own land as well, there's just
beautiful. Well, speaking of homemade things, what beer are we all drinking tonight? DJ, I'll go to you first. What do you want?
So I think I'm going to say that before we came on to record, I actually had quite a late dinner this evening. So I'm going to tell you what I was on during my dinner, because I think actually Owen, you might be drinking what I'm drinking as well, if I saw correctly there on the video.
Yeah.
So before we came on with the dinner, I had a Ballycloughavan Binbawn Pale Ale, 4.6%. A lovely pale ale, slightly different than, like, you know, we've seen a massive trend in kind of fruity, hazy, tropical pale ales over the last kind of 12 months to 24 months. This is more like a malty, bittery, with a bit of citrus in it. Much more, I would say it's much more traditional than a pale ale than, you know, those massive fruity ones. Fucking lovely, lovely one to drink, like, such a clean finish. Just one of those pale ales that always makes you, like, when you get to the bottom of the glass, you just want to top it back up again, you know. A really, really nice beer from our friends at Ballycloughavan. And I made it a point, right? We went to Ard Kyng stores the other day, and I put up the picture on Twitter, on the Snowcast Twitter, of the fridge in Ard Kyng stores, and I was like, near an offer. And in fairness, Julie corrected me to say that Ard Kyng stores lower the prices of their individual cans because of the new legislation we discussed last week. But I have to say, I said it to you, Owen, the Ballykilcavan and Wicklow Wolf branding on the cans stands out a mile when you look at it. When you look at a big packed fridge of lovely independent craft beer like that, and given the fact that I ordered a Ballykilcavan sweatshirt off the craft beer tees, I said, "Fuck it, I'm going to represent my wife's home county, and I'm going to represent craft beer tees and drink a Ballykilcavan beer tonight." So, Binball Pale Ale, top notch. And I think what you're drinking, one is what I'm actually drinking right now.
Same story, same fridge. I got attracted to that Ballykilcavan branding. Like, it was so good. Like, even like opening the fridge here at home, I've bought 5 cans there, and like the fridge looks so colorful and like all this like graphic art, like it's unbelievable. So I was on the Long Meadow IPA, which is a 5.5%er, and it says on the side of the tin, like, it's a traditional style IPA, right? And it's named after a 300-year-old field on their farm. But that pale ale, I don't know about you DJ, but I thought, like, I was like, this is actually more kind of golden ale-y. I thought it was kind of like, it brought me back to be kind of like in Amsterdam and drinking like Duvel or one of those lads. Like, I thought it was like kind of like that kind of a taste off it. It was really nice. It was so light, and but like, I was like, fuck, just bring me to Amsterdam now. Light up and let's go.
I think you're right, like, because I'm drinking the Long Meadow now, like, and there is like that barley-esque kind of lovely, almost like you can almost like taste the soil kind of stuff out of it. You know, it's that lovely kind of just homely, farmly kind of it's a real farmly kind of beer, isn't it? Like, you know, it's very traditional, a lovely beer to drink.
Yeah, I really liked it now, and it's just, I don't know. It was just, I think we've kind of spoken before on the podcast before about like those bridging beers and stuff like that. And I definitely think that that's a bridger. Like, if you're used to your macro breweries and macro beers, that like, if you're on your Carlsberg or Heineken or whatever, that like, that's definitely one that'll bridge you like to that. I suppose, as you were saying, that kind of like the more fruity IPAs and stuff like that, like, this is like the stepping stone to it. Like, and yeah. Savage, really good, really, really good. Shane, what about you, man? What are you tipping into?
Well, I've started out with a Think Hoppy Tots from Two Sides Brewery.
Oh,
my dear brother Irwin's collaborative brewing collaboration with himself and 57 The Headline, brewed by Third Barrel. It's I love it. It's a session, very session. It's relatively new to them. Very sessionable pale ale. It's dry hopped with citra hops, so she's nice and fresh, it's kind of very easy to taste the kind of sweet citrus fruits. I like it. It's only 4.3%. I like it always as a starting out. I like something light. I typically would drink heavier. I like a bit of porter.
Yeah, yeah.
but you can't start a porter. Well, depends on the day.
steady on.
but yeah, for today, I owe Irwin, I owe my brother Irwin a debt of thanks for, I don't think it would have been possible for me to get up and running with Craft Beer Teas had it not been for his kind of advice. He's my little brother. I was in the industry a good long while before he was, but I left to pursue other things, and over the last few years craft beer has been just booming in Ireland, and it's something he is extremely passionate about, always has been since we were kids. So anyway, long story short, the tagline on the back of his can, drink fresh, shop local, is really, that's what I feel like I want to be about with Craft Beer Teas.
Yeah,
that's what it is about. That's what the whole buzz is about. Shop local, and drink fresh beer, that benefits your community and your, yeah. So that's That's my starter.
Good stuff. Maybe let's expand on that a little bit more there. How'd you start up? Like, how'd you get into the craft beer teas? Like, how'd you make it as a business?
It's been on my mind to do something like this for the last couple of years, but I'm very into sustainability as well, and I'd kind of been waiting for a technology to develop called direct garment printing. But I'll take it back a step first and just go back to, so when I left college, so when I was in college, I was in UCD.
Hold on, how far are we going back now?
20 years, 20 odd years. Jesus Christ, 20 years this year.
Jeez.
I started in UCD and I started working in O'Brien's, the off-license in Stillorgan. And I found very quickly that I had a kind of head for it. I liked the sales end of it. I liked the kind of retail sales end of it. I just liked the off-license buzz, I suppose. So I did that for a couple of years during college. I then went off and I did an entrepreneurship degree in Wales. And when I came back to Dublin, a new off-license had opened in Stillorgan. And so I went there and I became the manager there. So anyway, long story. I say the phrase a lot, long story short. But long story short, he lasted about 2.5 years. He was a lunatic of a man. Absolute legend, man, but a lunatic. And after a couple of years, he wanted to exit quietly. He was a stockbroker. He'd made a mess of this. So I was in a very fortunate position, myself and two other lads, and we picked up an off-license in the dying days of the Celtic Tiger in 2006. I don't really come from money. I took out a small loan. And anyway, long story short, I ended up with an off-license at the age of 24. And at the time, there was a Tesco in Stillorgan already and the O'Brien's that I'd worked in. So competition was stiff. I was a bit off the beaten track as well. So I needed to do something different. So we kind of specialised in boutique restaurant wines that the supermarkets weren't selling. And then at the time, craft beer was just starting to emerge. And when I say craft beer, I mean O'Hara's was the only Irish craft beer.
Yeah.
You know, craft beer then was Brooklyn, you know, Sammy Adams, Sierra Nevada. That stuff was stuff that we see now is kind of somewhere between macro and craft, maybe.
Yeah.
Some people still have very much classed them as craft, but things have changed. Anyway, I realized at that time that this was the path. It was about quality over quantity. I had lads coming in, and, you know, in the early days, they'd come in and they just were buying 6 Dutch Gold off me, or 6 Bavaria. And over time, you'd persuade them to get a Sierra Nevada. Or whatever bottle of Duvel you mentioned there,
yeah,
bottle of Quack, something mad, and the tide started to change, and over time, you know, people started to, it became a destination off license. People started to come to us for that range of craft beer. We had the second largest range in the country at the time, only behind Redmond's and Randa, another savage off license. Anyway, things were good. Things were great until 2008 came around and the world fell apart, and. And at that point, it was cheaper for us to buy the likes of Heineken off Tesco next door to us than it was to buy it off Gilby's. So, and of course, as well, the craft beer market was only really emerging. And the lads who were kind of just starting to push into quality went back to you know, the cheaper cans. And so we packed it in and I left the industry somewhat with my tail between my legs, very disappointed. So, I went off. I've had a few other businesses and other bits and pieces of things that I've done and still do. But my wife at the time was doing large scale public event management, and her business was kind of starting to take off. It was really growing, so I kind of got stuck in with her for the last few years. That's kind of what I've been doing for the last few years. But always, of course, with an eye on what was going on in my beloved craft beer industry. And of course, things have changed massively in the last 5 years. You know, since kind of 2014 or so. It's been a roller coaster of new breweries emerging. There's enough market there. The market share is big enough that these breweries can survive, just about some of them, but they can survive. Mm. I think it's a path to a better world. Like, not just the environmentally stuff, but just in terms of quality of life and how, you know, what our experience of life is and just everything, you know. Community and
yeah, it is. Yeah, it's just that's the word I was just about to say. It is community, isn't it? Like, you know, it's even say the Ballykilcavin stuff we're talking about there, where it's, you know, it's their own farm, and even like the stuff that they've contributed now to Waterford Distillery for for the grain for their whiskey, you know, like that, you know, it's this sharing community. You see it with like the collaborations of beers and breweries and stuff like that, like where they're coming together and, you know, different ideas, sharing grain, sharing hops, sharing whatever. Like it is class. It is beautiful. Its own community. Like, yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. And I wonder if it's just maybe partly because we're in the early days of this industry. And, you know, I use a phrase a lot, a rising tide lifts all boats. And so, you know, we're in a position at the minute where craft brewers helping out each other only benefits everybody, you know, so we're kind of all in it together. And I hope that maintains into the longer term.
Yeah.
And in fact, actually, to be honest with you, my website wouldn't be possible without that kind of collaborative feeling that's kind of that we have in the craft beer industry, where people are working together. I mean, there's very few other industries where I could put competitors effectively on the same site, you know. And the reason that the breweries who are involved there at the minute are happy to sign up to it is that they realize it's not about just them. It's about the bigger picture. It's about the industry. It's about promoting quality over quantity, you know, promoting drinking quality over quantity, and a new relationship with alcohol that's not just about going out and getting locked, but going out and enjoying what you're drinking, enjoying the company you're with, you know, that kind of. So I've kind of been keeping an eye on things. And then another passion of mine is kind of technology. And I mentioned a few minutes ago about a thing called direct-to-garment printing. So yeah. Direct-to-garment printing is a game changer of game changers when it comes to printed clothes. So in a nutshell, what it is, your desktop printer, the way it sprays print directly onto paper. Well, yeah. With direct-to-garment printing, it's a desktop printer with reconfigured heads so that it sprays the ink directly onto the clothes, onto the item. So what that means is there's no waste, for starters. So relative to screen printing, which would be the most popular printing style, there's no waste at all. And same with dye sublimation. The costs are also quite a bit lower. And the kind of energy intensity, the energy that's used in producing t-shirts is way, way lower. Critically as well, so with something like screen printing, and this isn't a dig at screen printing, by the way, there are many screen printers out there in Ireland who are trying to make their printing techniques more and more environmentally friendly all the time, and it is getting better. But ultimately, you need to print a screen to do screen printing, which means printing a one-off t-shirt isn't that economical. You need to print 10 or 20 or 30.
Okay,
you
know, okay, yeah.
Good value. Whereas with direct-to-garment, because you're printing directly onto the item, there's no volume, there's no scaling. You know,
it's just
no
the ink that you're using per... It's just the ink that you're using, yeah.
Exactly. So that means really you can print items one at a time, and as I say, there's no... you know, you don't lose any cost efficiencies. So it also means I don't need to, with direct-to-garment printing, you don't need to pre-print anything. Items are printed one at a time for the customers. The customer makes the purchase, you print the item, and you send it to them. It basically means you've got no waste. The way I've set this business up is that I have no waste. I don't keep stock in advance. So the reason DJs, and I apologize sincerely, DJ, the reason DJs jumpers are taken a little bit longer than they would in the normal method, I suppose, is that my process is when somebody orders, I accumulate all my orders once a week. I place the order with the manufacturer in Belgium. They're a Belgian outfit called Stanley Stella, who are a world leader, they're a world leader in kind of sustainable clothing. Everything they make is 100% organic cotton and made from recycled materials and stuff. So anyway, long story short, I place the order with the manufacturer. They send it to me. I have found only in the last month the first guy in Ireland with a direct-to-garment printer. They're a very, very expensive machines. This technology really has only emerged in the last kind of 3 years. Probably in the last 5 years, but really only in the last 3 years, the pricing has come down. Prior to meeting this gentleman, the first batch of t-shirts that I did before Christmas, the first t-shirts and hoodies, I printed with a company in Germany. And the machine that they print on costs $250,000. It's pricey, very expensive machine. This type of printing direct to garment, it's like any technology, it can be used for good and bad, right? So you've probably seen a lot of websites online that are, they're doing a kind of a print on demand service where they're able to customizing products, customize t-shirts and stuff like that. And then, you know, printing them one at a time and selling what I consider to be low grade, not sustainable products. And that is not a good future. You know, finding a way where we can print even more t-shirts and hoodies. Currently, I'll get into a few facts in a few minutes. I prepared a few facts for DJ. Currently, we produce 100 billion garments in the world every year for about 7.5 billion people. Like, so it's mental. So we don't need to be producing more clothes. We need to produce way, way less clothes. It's kind of like craft beer. We need quality over quantity. So direct garment potentially could be used for, you know, it could make things worse. However, the way I see it is it's a much more environmentally print method, as I see it, for kind of one-off prints, and certainly for what I'm doing, which is kind of direct to customer prints. So I guess in the longer term, I feel like it's going to get proliferated. These machines will be kind of more widely available. The gentleman who I was very fortunate enough, I spent probably a year, I spoke to every major printer in the country, and all of them said the same. They'd love to buy a direct garment machine, but they're too expensive, and they don't see the market size as being big enough in Ireland to justify the cost at the minute. So what I'm trying to do is I've been in touch with a couple of other Shopify owners, Irish companies who are doing kind of this kind of printing on demand style. And so I've been in touch with a couple of them, and I'm trying to put together a bit of a cooperative of Irish shops, where we can kind of maybe buy a machine between us, or persuade a printer to get one of these machines, and that they could kind of fulfill all our orders and all our work. So direct garment printing is only really emerged in the last short while, and that's really why I feel like I could do this now. I couldn't have done this business even a year ago, because I didn't want to get into the route of screen printing. In order for me to have what I want to do, which is, you know, about, you know, there's about 80 odd breweries in Ireland. Even if I was to have half of them on my website, the craft beers that come out, the breweries are getting so fast now. They're bringing out a craft beer, you know, and a month later they're bringing out another one, or a couple months later. So it's a fast turnover. Maybe that batch comes and goes. I don't want to be stuck with a heap of t-shirts. And so I'm not pre-printing anything. As I say, zero waste. And it means it's slower to get to my customer. But everybody wins elsewhere. The last thing I'll say about direct garment printing is that really what's changed now is that the quality is so good. The quality is so good that it's as good as any other print type. And again, 2 years ago, even that wasn't the case. So this direct garment thing, I'm intending on harnessing it, I suppose, to, I've started out with craft beer. And obviously it's an industry I kind of somewhat know and love. But in the longer term, I see it as a way where maybe I could do teas for a lot of other small scale local businesses who aren't in the business of selling merch. They don't want to be selling merch, but to have an outlet where something like what I'm doing with breweries, where basically I sell the t-shirt for them, we split the profit with them, so they're making a couple of quid on it. But of course, like the breweries, nobody's in it for the money. You know, it's about branding. It's about getting the brand out there. And it's about people wearing their stuff. That's what they want. And for me, yeah, I'm in a good place in my life. I say I've done reasonably all right the last few years, and I'm trying to set this up as a non-profit. If I can cover my costs, I'm happy enough.
It's nice. It kind of goes back to that community thing again, isn't it? Like just giving back a little bit as well to the lads, like, you know, because I suppose, as you said there, like there's not much in it for them other than like just exposing their brand maybe a bit more. But I suppose it's, you know, giving you a boost, giving them a little bit of a boost. Like, you know, it's just a nice thing to do in general. Like, you know, and for then like the fans of the beers, it's quality.
Shane, can I just ask you something? There, in terms of, you know, as you said, like you guys, when you had the off license, you were fairly innovative in terms of like getting the craft beers. And even before there was Irish craft beer, you know, you had your beers from Belgium and the States, etc. And then obviously, like, you know, economic factors meant that consumer habits reverted back to, say, like, you know, the cheap beer as your Dutch Gold or Heineken or whatever, as you explained. But do you see, like, you know, in terms of, I think the entire world now recognizes the need for a more sustainable future. Do you think that, like, consumers need to change their expectations and their habits, and that, like, do you think you guys, like you and other people who are using who are using these new methods, you know, are ahead of the curve, and that eventually consumers, like as I said, you know, I'm not too bothered waiting an extra week or so. Do you think that, like, we, as a society, as, like, you know, carbon emissions go up and unsustainability goes up, the patience of consumers has massively gone down? You know, even you talk about internet speeds, like people might be listening to this and there might be a delay on mine because, like, the internet speed has been a bit sketchy when we started off with the call before we hit record, and like, you know, people get so impatient with stuff like internet speeds, and like, if I go to buy a sweatshirt on your website and my phone is being slower than normal, you know, people get so angry. So do you see it as something like, you know, almost this kind of like, right, we all just need to slow down and be a bit more patient in general, and that these kind of more sustainable, more environmentally friendly, more local, more beneficial to the local economy as well, I would argue. Do you think that, like, consumer habits need to change? And regress is probably the wrong word, but just revert to a more sustainable and method to be successful. And the other thing I was going to say is, I was going to ask you about was, you know, the way, like, like Urban Outfitters is like this place that seems to upcycle. No, I think they do it the wrong way. Like, they seem to upcycle all these old clothes that they find that are really high quality from like the 70s and 80s and sell them on for a massive profit. You know, the way, like, I have uncles who have my father has a jumper that he wore to college that he still wears today. And it's a bit faded and it's actually kind of cool. Like, yeah, you know, I'm just gutted that he's 5'8" and I'm 6'5", that I can't wear it. But do you think as well that, like, this kind of high quality, you buy a T-shirt and you wear that T-shirt for 10 years. Do you see that as the future as well?
Well, I just nail on the head there, DJ, like, on a lot of different points. But yeah, like, that's it. I see the future as, I think we need to wake up, and I think we need to... I think we need to be a bit more cognizant of what we're doing here on this planet, the short, brief existence that we have, and we need to be able to stop and smell the roses. And I really feel like, in general, society has kind of gone a bit sideways in the last few years. We're all kind of chasing this thing. People are just not as, I suppose, just as capable of kind of taking things easy and kind of, I'm off on a side point. Let me go back. So I suppose consumer habits do need to change. Yes. And that's exactly what this, that's what I see myself as doing. So my personal carbon footprint is utterly enormous. Some of the festivals and events that we've been involved in are just the carbon footprint we've generated is enormous. So for me, I feel like this is my kind of making up for things. And what I'm doing with this business is trying to teach people, or show people, should I say, not teach people, but just show people that there are other ways that you can do clothes, and slow fashion is the way forward. You mentioned about your uncle there and that jumper. That is the future. If we're going to deal with fast fashion, as you might call it, all these online stores and that, it contributes more to climate change than all of global aviation and shipping and global shipping put together. It's enormous. You know, what goes into making a T-shirt is, like, you know, 3 years worth of drinking water. It's insane. So we need to focus on three things: care, rewear, and repair. And that means when items are bought, clothing items are bought, we need to take care of them, and we need to take care of them for a long time. The only reason really that I'm willing to sell craft beer T-shirts is that I know that if somebody buys one of my craft beer T-shirts, they're going to love that. That they love the craft beer. It's not just some random T-shirt with some random thing on it. They have an attachment to it. They have an attachment to the area, you know, where it comes from. There's more of an emotional connection. And I have T-shirts like your uncle's as well that I've had for a decade, and I'll never throw them out, no matter how many holes they get in them, because I just love them. And that's a crucial part of this. I don't want to sell crap, and I don't want to contribute to the kind of the problem of the kind of very fast turnover of clothes. The second thing then is the rewear thing. And that's again, it's the same thing. It's, you know, if you love what you're wearing, if you love the item, you're gonna rewear it. The last item on the list is repair, and that's not something I've done anything about as of yet. However, it's something I would like to do. There's a brand, I very much admire called Patagonia in the USA.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Patagonia. Yeah, so Patagonia, you buy an item of clothes for them and it's kind of got a lifetime warranty. You know, it gets damaged, you can return it to them. It can be, you know, so that's a quality item. And it's like craft beer. We need to go towards quality rather than quantity. So for me with the t-shirts, and a lot of people I know think this is mental, but I'm not quite there yet, but in the next couple of months, I'm going to roll out a kind of a 10-year... So basically, if you buy a t-shirt from me, I will give you you get a little slip with your package, and that'll have a number on it that'll be tied to the artwork, connected to the artwork that's printed on your t-shirt. And 10 years from now, no matter what condition that t-shirt is in, if you return it to me, I'll give you a replacement at cost price. So basically, if you have a t-shirt and you keep it and use it for 6 months extra to when you plan to throw it out, and this is on average, obviously, you can save about 30% of the kind of like the kind of environmental impact of that t-shirt. So keeping t-shirts for a long time, keeping clothes for a long time, finding other ways to repurpose and reuse them, you know, turn it into a rag if that's what you got to do. And so what I'm trying to do is, as I say, in 10 years, the idea would be that I'm trying to sell clothes that people are going to keep for a long time, and that they know that in 10 years time, they'll get a replacement for it.
I think what you're doing is absolutely amazing. It's definitely the way forward. Like this need for people to have a piece of clothing on the same day of purchase is bonkers. Like, what are you doing with it? Like you're not, like, unless you're wearing it out that night, which is like, why are you buying it that day anyway? Like, you know, it's insane. There's absolutely no need to do it. And actually, to bring in on that waste point as well, I know in Newbridge up here, there's been a few boutiques that have gone out of business over the pandemic. And simply because, right, that they can't order they can't order specifically for a customer. So say, you know, whatever, this is, I'm getting all this off Kira, by the way. She'd be following all these Instagrammers. Like, but she was saying that basically a shop in Newbridge went out of business. But she was saying one of the things was that, say she sold out of mediums or size eights or whatever of a dress. Okay. And that she was saying that they can't just order another size eight dress. All of these things come in packs for the business. So you have to, if you're ordering from a company, you have to order eight mediums, four large, four small, two extra small, two extra large in order. And that's your pack. That's what you get. So you can't. So like, it just makes way more sense that as you require fashion, it just makes so much sense. And another podcast I was listening to as well was the David McWilliams podcast. And they were talking about this a few months ago, and they were saying about shops in Dublin, and that wouldn't it be amazing if, you know, like, you know, you don't need that big, huge shop in the center of Dublin. You only need a small premises. And all you do is you hold one item of each size in the shop, and you don't hold stock there. You just hold demo stuff. So you can go in and you can try on the clothes, and then you go and you order, they order it, and then it's sent to you a week later. There's no need to get it there and then, like, and I think that's another way that this
whole
fast fashion could go ahead. Like, yeah.
You said something. I was going to say, as one of the people in the world that has the most awkward body shapes, I think like you hit a really key point there, Owen, in terms of size as well. You know, like if for me, like the amount of times that I go, like, you know, I like Niamh here would tell you that, like, I have just. Niamh would tell you that I contribute way too much because I have too many t-shirts. But the reason I have too many t-shirts is because like that, I'll buy a couple of craft beer sweatshirts now or t-shirts off Shane. And I got a t-shirt in the post this week. It's an indirect provision t-shirt. It's the one I'm on now. Like, you know, and I'll have this for 10 years. And like this was contributing to a fundraiser for legal fees against deportation of people who are fleeing persecution. So like, you know, as I say, like you'll buy a t-shirt for that and you'll trust that, you know, the association are doing research into that. But then I have two hoodies I wear probably the most I bought in New York in 2009, you know, and I haven't gotten rid of them yet. And I feel like, you know, they get more character in my mind, they get more character every year. Niamh slags me off. Like, she's like, how long do you have these? Like, they need to be thrown out. But in my head, like, if I throw them out, what am I going to wear when I'm mucking about with a few calves in the farm or something? Like, you know, it's definitely a factor. I think now we might take a quick ad break, because I definitely need to empty my bladder and fill up my glass.
Same.
So we'll take a quick break and hopefully the ad break is not for Debenhams. Please don't listen to that for Primark or Pennies. Yeah, like this would be fucking Abercrombie and Fitch or something now. But we'll take a quick break and we'll come back to the podcast in a second after we fill up the.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome back, everyone. The glasses are full, the bladders are empty. And we actually, when we came back after a little break there, we went down quite the rabbit hole of chat here. The chat is really flowing. So we said, fuck it. If we kept going the way we were going, we were never going to record a second half of this podcast, because the conversation was flowing too well. So we're back now. And guys, actually, we're talking about sustainability. We're talking about long-term visions for the world and society, etc. And I think, like, you know, to bring it back to the podcast and to bring it back to, you know, if we're sitting in a pub and we're sitting on a high stool drinking some Ballyclavin beer and we're debating this with, say, three owl lads in the corner drinking macro breweries, what would we say would be the future of craft beer in Ireland, independent craft beer, and where, you know, how does independent craft beer in Ireland move from the somewhere between 2.3 and 2.8% market share it has at the moment to say the 10 to 12% market share that craft beer has in the States? Like, how do we as people who like to promote and support independent craft beer in Ireland drive that movement along with the brewers to getting them to have that kind of market share in Ireland, lads?
I'll go. So I suppose for me, I think it's kind of harps back to what Shane was saying earlier on there about his venture into the off-license industry and what he was doing at the time. And, you know, it's getting those lads who are coming in, getting six cans of Dutch Gold or Tuborg or whatever, and it's, you know, offering the, you know, lads, would you not try this now? And, you know, maybe get have one of these Long Meadow IPAs, you know, it's a nice bridge and beer that you might get a bit more taste out of now, like, you know. The only thing I'd say about it, though, is that it is hard financially in the craft beer scene, isn't it? Like, as in, like, it's all well and good for us to go and say, oh, sure, you know, these beers taste nicer, but they also cost more as well, like, you know. And we've had lads on the podcast before who've been students in WIT and UCC and whatever, and, like, they can't afford to go and get, like, six craft beers, you know. So I don't know, like, what has been great, I think, is has been the take up of the likes of Lidl and stuff, and they've done their little I don't know, whatever it is, like some partnership anyway with I know Ballykilcavan are in it this month with their Bin Bawn Pale Ale, and I think their red ale as well are in Lidl this month. And I think they offer them at, like, a slightly lower price as well. So maybe it's something like that. But anyway, again, bringing it back, I think it is down to the off licenses and stuff like that to kind of, I know they can't do offers anymore, but maybe just to promote them a little bit more and to have, like, your, you know, beer of the week and stuff like that. And then the second thing that I think has been, for me, I think, which has been a massive thing, is that having craft beer pubs has been an amazing thing as well, where, like, people, like, have gone to places, like, these craft beer pubs are always, always trendy looking spots. Like, they're always a really, really cool looking spot, and it attracts people there. So, like, we always give the example of Yellow Belly's tap room in Waterford of Grady's Yard. And, like, it's quality, like, doing, like, food, like, you know, pop-up restaurant-y place on site as well. Like, everyone loves that shit, like, you know. So, you know, do that and then have it in your place that you offer tasters and stuff of beers. You know, don't be afraid to have the little small glasses and tasters and get people tasting the beers, because I think that's the only way that you get people to swap over, because it's way too easy to go in and brand recognize things and go, there's a Heineken, there's a Guinness, there's a whatever, and you just reorder because it's just buried into your head from matches and whatever other advertising that they have. So, like, it's, you know, it is that thing of you go in and you order a Heineken in Grady's Yard or whatever, and they go, oh, yeah, you know, you can get your pint of Heineken, but, you know, do you want to try a Citra Pale Ale or whatever? And they give you the little glass of that. And yes, you might still get your Heineken there, but you might get your Citra the next round or whatever, you know. So that's me is the one of the ways that I see that they'll eat into that market a little, you know, because... it's just very, very hard. Like, the advertising money that these big macro places have is so hard to compete with. So I think it kind of boils down again to what Shane is saying about that community spirit, and that everyone kind of needs to get in on that kind of community effort of promoting beers and promoting everything amongst themselves, and, like, you know, offering these little, you know, offerings of beers and little tasters and stuff like that in order to get people used to the beers, you know. Shane, what about you? What do you think?
I think there's some great points made there, Owen.
Thanks.
Yeah, I think you're spot on several points there. I guess for me, from the off-license perspective, like you mentioned about tasting. Tasting is a huge part of it. You know, I've seen it so many times. Somebody picks up a craft beer. You know, they're a mass produced beer drinker. Always drank the same beer. 30 years, never drank anything different. You put a craft beer in their hand, you know, a small glass, and give them a taste, and they instantly know this is like steak versus McDonald's. You know, it's they can taste the quality. They know it's better, and so. It's just about getting them past that line, getting them to then maybe, you know, if you can get them to take one home, and it happens very quickly. It really does. Like like it can happen within maybe 10, 12 beers where they break that attachment they have to that, you know, drink that they always drunk. And once you slip into that, it's hard to go back because you want to try, you know, oh, there's another, I found a pale ale that I like, so I want to try another pale ale. I spot another one, there's another one, you know, and it kind of snowballs from there. And suddenly you're realizing that you're not drinking to get drunk anymore. You're drinking because you love the taste of it. I also think as well, in terms of market share growth, to get to the kind of size market share that they have in the States, I honestly, hand on heart, believe it's only a matter of time in Ireland and elsewhere. And that's just because, again, it's like I look at, you know, the people who are coming up who are younger to me, and again, they focus on what they're about. And again, it's the same in terms of food, in terms of clothes, in terms of so many things, where they have that kind of value towards locally produced, well-made stuff. And so I can't see any other way except that it comes back.
Actually, I'll tell you a story there about a stag I was at back in March of last year, where just before the pandemic, just to be clear on that, didn't break any guidelines. So I was organizing the stag for this chap. So, you know, had a bit of money in the kitty from everyone bringing in. So I said I'd do my due diligence and I'd go and get a big load of beer for the house that we were going. Like, you know, I'd get like boxes. So I got like box of Heineken, a box of Bud, box of Corona or something like that. Like, got a few kind of like mix and matchy cheapy beers like for everyone. And I tell you, there was maybe 4 or 5 lads who came, saw what I bought, and went off to the off license and bought a big load of craft beers for themselves instead. You know, so you know, and these are lads now that like wouldn't turn their nose up to it now beforehand, like, you know. But like, you know, I think it's a bit indicative of like, no, actually, we want to enjoy our weekend with like beer that we want to fully taste and stuff. And yeah, I thought it was really good. I thought to see that, like, you know.
You're spot on there. It's very like group based. So within my kind of group of friends, like I'm from Offaly originally, and I've got a group of friends from Offaly, and I could see it happen. It's like a virus spreading over time. You know, it started off, obviously I was kind of quite into it, and everyone was into it, and then a couple of the others kind of got into it, and now like there's none of us would even consider. You know, of course we'd have a pint of Heineken if we go to a match, and enjoy it, but as I say, given the option, we'll choose something else. You know what, there's something important to say on that as well. You mentioned about the US and again the market share. So I think it's possibly something I heard from you guys from one of the earlier podcasts. Is there a statistic that in America you're only every person is something like within 10 miles of a brewery or 10 kilometers? Do you remember something like that?
It could have been us now. But
I looked that up later.
Yeah, that sounds like something I wanted to say.
Maybe I'm slightly off on that, but it's really not far off that. What I'm saying, and really the point is that there are breweries spread very well all across America. So in Ireland, as I say, really only in the last 5 years, we started to see the kind of the dawn of breweries all over the place. Like you look at Ballycocavan, obviously we've mentioned a lot this evening. You know, that's a brand that Laois people will get behind. Now, I'm from Edenderry in Offaly. We don't have a brewery local to Edenderry, but I can tell you that the second we do have a brewery close to Edenderry, people in Edenderry and around the area will be drinking it. So I think over time, we're going to see more and more breweries emerge in Ireland. And I think more and more community-based breweries who are you know, making nano batches or micro batches, and they're just selling into the local community. And yeah, I mean, we talk about the future, to go back to what DJ mentioned. I see the future of craft beer as exactly that, where we're going on a stag to Sligo or wherever we're going. And it's not about, I'm not going to see Ballycocavan necessarily in the fridge. I'm going to see local Sligo brews. Mm. And I think that certain places will develop a reputation for being good for ale and good for, you know, this and that. And I think that we will kind of travel to those spots with that in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nearly like the way, I say, to bring it back to the macro end of things, like the way, you know, they say that like Guinness in, you know, Ireland and England is, you know, much better than those that are, you know, elsewhere, you know. And it is that kind of regionalized thing where, you know, even if it's not true, like, you'd still believe it, you know, you'd still go, oh Jesus, that's going to be great now down here. And like, you know, it's, you know, it's the same, like when you go to Amsterdam and you go to the Heineken factory and you go, I've never had a Heineken like this before. So fresh, so whatever, like, even though it was probably brewed over in Africa or somewhere and shipped back over, you know? So like, yeah, I think you're dead right. Like, yeah, it's, it could definitely be that way where, you know, you think, oh, I can't wait now for the Sligo Porter or whatever, you know, or a Kerry Ale or something.
And there's maybe a few breweries there and they're all making good porters and, exactly, and they're feeding off each other. And, you know, and the brewer there knows the brewer there and sure, they're mates, you know what I mean? They're competitors, but we're friendly competitors in this industry. And, and as I say, rising tide lifts all boats. And yeah, there's also, there is some government supports for people trying to set up breweries in Ireland. And I would like to see much more of that. In fact, to that end, I would like to see an agency in Ireland that was focused on Indigenous businesses. We've got Enterprise Ireland here who are phenomenal for startups who plan to export. We've got IDA Ireland who are phenomenal for bringing foreign direct investment in. But we don't have an agency that specializes in Indigenous businesses that are just producing for local market.
They don't care about
indeed, you. Indeed. That's a concern. You know, there's an argument about state aid and the EU and that their hands are a little bit tied, but I don't believe that.
No. If you're not exporting, you're not doing anything in their eyes.
Indeed, they don't care. Your contribution to GDP is negligible. Sorry, DJ, go on.
But that's a different type of economics altogether. That's circular economics where, like, you know, the money doesn't leave the local area and that economics has been shown to be actually like far more beneficial to small businesses. And I think you're dead right, Shane. I would love to see that approach. And it brings me back to actually the Irish beer snob Wayne and Jan who've been on our podcast. Had a brilliant interview with Barry from Kildare Brewing Company. Actually, towards the start of the last pandemic, I think it was, because I think Wayne and Jan took a break from recording there for a couple of months. And it was at some stage during the first lockdown, I believe. And they were talking about lockdown IPA, the first iteration of it, Owen, that you got a couple of cases of for myself and yourself. And a really good beer, and the second one is actually I think even better again. But they spoke to Barry about, you know, because we said, like, we kind of randomly came across Kildare Brewing through the lockdown and not going to the pubs, so we were looking to buy cans and we just came across them on social media and bought them that way. And Barry made a point in that interview that, like, absolutely hit me like a brick wall and made me sit back and think, Jesus, like, this is the solution to, like, if this was adopted globally, it's a solution to climate change that we've spoken about. It's a solution to the biodiversity crisis. It's the solution to so many, like, issues around like poverty and stuff like that. Mm. Where Barry said, like, I have no interest in producing beer that's going to Donegal or going to Kerry. He was like, I'm in Kildare, I want to produce high quality stuff and serve the people of Kildare with that beer. And if I can do that and earn a nice little living for myself and have my business be viable, then that's enough. And I think that kind of attitude is just, like, purely something that I could 100% get behind. And I think about that kind of attitude, and I like, when I listen to Shane talk about craft beer teas as a concept of a business and what you're trying to achieve, Shane, and I compare that to, say, like, you know, Devlin's workers who've been on strike for fucking, you know, 300 days at this stage. And I can't help but feel like what we're talking about in terms of Kildare Brewing Company versus Heineken or Diageo or Molson Coors, there's a there's a mirror image in that debate versus, you know, craft beer teas or a sustainable eco-conscious clothing brand versus, you know, your Primarks, any of the fast fashion people that you mentioned earlier on in the podcast. I suppose, do you think there's there's a parallel there, and you know, what are your musings on, you know, how the Devlin's deal went down, and coming from someone who's breaking into the fashion industry, albeit in a very niche mode.
Well, I'll tell you something, DJ, you're absolutely on the ball there. Like the similarities are striking between this industry and fashion, between the craft beer industry and fashion, and actually many other industries. But just on the fashion end of things, I mean, there's a great story, not a great story, it's an awful story that's kind of in the news there at the minute that really kind of highlights all this. So as you may be aware, Topshop, Zara, H&M, all those guys, they're all gone, they're all in trouble in Ireland. Their brick and mortar stores are all gone under. There's about 1,600 staff are going to get laid off, and it looks like ASOS are going to buy them up at the minute, the online giant. Now, those companies were in trouble prior to COVID, and you know, brick and mortar stores in general are, the online competitors are just, they're so, you know, their costs are so low, they're just, so the market is moving that way. However, I read a fascinating, there's an RT News article on it only a couple of days ago, and near the end of the article, it says that when the pandemic happened, all of the online sales that these stores got in Ireland, so your Topshop in Ireland, Zara in Ireland, H&M.ie, all of those sales went to the UK parent group. So the items were shipped from the UK, and the Irish outlets or the Irish side of it never saw a cent of it. And yes, here we are. So the Irish company never, so, you know, like that says to me, we've got 1,600 people, retail staff, who are now laid off because we, as a nation, we, you know, spent our money in those stores who effectively are owned by foreign multinationals who have no investment in Ireland, who have no investment in the people in Ireland, who have no investment in keeping jobs here. And yeah, so like, I guess, you know, when you look at that scenario, like that's not good. There are several ethical, sustainable brands emerging in Ireland. And in the long term, if we can keep supporting those brands, we keep our jobs here and we don't have that risk that one day the environment changes for whatever reason, a pandemic emerges and suddenly, bump, you know, all of those jobs are taken out from underneath us. Like, to build a resilient economy, you need long-term jobs that can't be taken, you know, quickly, can't be moved quickly. And so, yeah, so when I see it, like when we say shop local, I really believe in that. You know, don't go to ASOS. Don't go to Zara. Don't go to Topshop. Go to, you know, Jill and Jackie's boutique store down the road. Mm. You know, yes, it costs a little more, but you pay for what you get. And I don't mean just the quality of the item. I mean, that money comes back into your community. It, you know, you don't necessarily directly see it, but you indirectly see it. And so, yeah, it's, yeah, I mean, fashion, fast fashion and the way things have been, it's, yes, it's a great parallel. It really is a great parallel to craft beer and quality and Irishness and shop local and invest in our own people. And by the way, I don't come at the kind of shop local thing from like a particularly Irish perspective. I believe the same system should be viable all around the world. You know, and we in Ireland, I think we have, you know, we're one of the richest nations in the world, thanks to free education in the 80s. We're generally speaking, most people in Ireland are fairly on the ball. We have a reasonably good idea of the world relative to other nations, I feel. And I kind of see it as our responsibility to create an example, to lead by example, you know, to create an economy here that is more, that is based on the kind of shop local principles. And that idea can be taken up anywhere else, for the betterment of those people. You know, we've massive problems with wealth inequality. We've massive problems with immigration and emigration all over the world. And to me, the solution there is not more of the same and debating whether we're going to let people come to Europe or not, for example. We need to help these nations build up their own local indigenous economies, you know, and we have all the tools here to do it. So let's do it.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see that approach. It'd be so nice. And like, you know, even I know there was like there's a girl probably my age, in the girls' secondary school, who's like opened up a boutique in Waterford, and like, you know, just the quality of the stuff that's in there, like this, the cool outfit, everything, and like, you know, other little bits that she's like brought, like, you know, like she has her shop where she's selling her own clothes, but is also selling because she is the say the brick and mortar store. So it's also selling soaps from another producer, selling like from another producer, selling, you know, all these little bits and stuff. And it's such a lovely approach. And like, you know, that the stuff like that she, like, you know, had made like Aran sweaters and stuff like that, like the quality, like, you know, you're talking about stuff that's going to last the test of time. Like there's Aran sweaters out there that we've seen, like, that will definitely last like hail, sleet, snow, everything. Like, you know, I think it's an amazing thing. And yeah, you're dead right. I think though it's going to be tough though, isn't it? Like, as in trying to combat a €6 t-shirt or whatever, and changing people's mentality is going to be so tough. But it is that it's that concept.
But it's the same as craft beer.
It's the same. Exactly. Yeah. Go on, DJ.
That was one of the points I was going to make there in terms of, like, you know, do we need to do like, is consumer education, like to bring it back to consumer education, like, do you turn around to someone and say, right, you can buy, like, as you say, on a €6 t-shirt from Next or Zara or wherever now, but you'll have to buy another one in 3 months' time. So you have to buy four a year. So you're spending £24 a year on that, on four t-shirts. And over 10 years, you're spending £240 just on that one t-shirt. Or could you buy a €25 t-shirt off Shane? I can't remember how much your t-shirts are, Shane. I bought them one night after a couple of cans. but say, for example, could you buy a 25?
They're gone up, actually.
Could you buy a €25 t-shirt off Shane? Could you buy two of those for £50 and they do you for 10 years? And then over the course of the 10 years, you've actually spent a fraction of what you would have continuously buying €6 t-shirts. And you have reduced your carbon footprint by a massive amount. And as well, you have a t-shirt with a bit of fucking character, as opposed to, you know, some yoke that has been produced on the high street. And I think that buy local, shop local thing that Shane, you've reiterated throughout this podcast, and it's something that we've tried to reiterate throughout our years doing this podcast, is that, you know, if you buy local, you're supporting a local job. If you buy on ASOS, you're supporting some crowd in the UK or some crowd in
Investment Russia or
wherever it is, you know. Whereas
Equifax.
Yeah. Whereas, like, if you take Ballykilcavan again, for example, and their Clancy's Cans series, if you buy Ballykilcavan beer, you're supporting the Clancy family because they're employed the Ballykilcavan farm. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's like they've dedicated a whole series to the Clancy family, who've been like integral workers on their farm for generations. So, like, buying Ballykilcavan, you're direct.
Sorry, DJ, to cut across here. I have to say, you're absolutely utterly spot on there with Ballykilcavan in particular, from a lot of different perspectives. Did you see that tweet that I think Portlaoise Pub Club put up a couple of days ago? You know, grown in a field in Laois, brewed in a brewery in Laois, sold in a little in Laois, put in a fridge in Laois, and drunk by a Laois person. You know, that is it, and that's what it's all about. Just in terms of a few of your statistics, since it seemed somewhat appropriate to what we're talking about now, and your friend Owen in that girl in Waterford, maybe, and I wish her the best of luck. So you mentioned about Aran sweaters there. So we do make Aran sweaters here, but really it's small scale production. We don't have any manufacturing facility in Ireland anymore. Fruit of the Loom used to manufacture clothes here, but they packed up in 2004, maybe. They had a plant in Buncrana, in Derry. In Donegal and another plant in Derry. And that to me is very sad. And actually, that's very much one of my long-term goals. I'd really like to be able to manufacture clothes in Ireland again. Up until the 1960s, 90% of US clothes were produced domestically. Nowadays, that is 3%.
Wow.
And indeed. And we don't even have a loom in Ireland. We don't do it at all. So I feel like that is the future, is kind of manufacturing and you know, producing clothes here. We're, as it is right now, we would still have to import the kind of organic cotton and the kind of materials. However, there are new innovative again, materials coming through. I actually have a t-shirt that I love, but I can't sell for craft beer teas. It's actually made from renewable wood, 100% renewable wood.
Wow.
But yeah, it's amazing. It's a Californian company. They're legendary, but the t-shirt is just a bit too light for us for Ireland. So it's not there yet. I've been onto them and see if they can do a heavy duty for us. But what I'm saying is that the future is bright in terms of the materials that could be involved. You know, we're getting better and better at recycling polyester. The hoodies that I sell have 15% recycled plastic bottles in them. And that's recycled polyester. So we're getting better and better at these things. There's a place in the EU, a place in Italy called Prato. Yeah. Extraordinary place. So basically 30 years ago, this was the dump of Italy. And over time, the people who lived there just started to get better and better at recycling the materials that were dumped there and making them into new clothes. And now they've got what's really the world's first fully, you know, recyclable clothes kind of, you know, spot. And so that's a technology that we need to roll out elsewhere and, including Ireland. So,
wow. That's incredible. Like fair play to you, Shane. Like that's such a good approach. Like I think that nearly the episode title of this is like this kind of community and like just approach to everything. Like it's so nice. Like, and, like it's definitely the way forward. Like what is all this waste in the world? Like, again, harping back to like the online ordering shops of ASOS or whatever, like there's some mad statistic, and I'm just going to pull a number out of my hole here, but it's something like 2/3 or 80% or something like that of, you know, say if you order a t-shirt or a top or whatever from ASOS, and it comes to your house and you get it and you decide, oh no, it's not the right size, doesn't suit me or whatever, and you return it, like something like 80% of those clothes are binned. Like it's a mad figure. Anyway, it's definitely
there's a garbage truck of clothes burned every second on planet Earth. Every second, yeah. One yeah. Garbage truck of clothes gets burned. Yeah. Not even landfilled, burnt. It's mental. In the West as well, I mean, 10-30% of recycle of tees, of recycled t-shirts. So if you bring your t-shirt down and you put it into the recycling, you know, the clothes center, box, whatever it is, 10-30% of those will actually get resold at charity shops. The rest of them all get sent back to the developing world, where effectively we're destroying their indigenous local markets with oversupply. So how it works is, and actually it's a real problem in pandemic times, because all of these local markets in North Africa and elsewhere, people aren't going to, and people aren't buying clothes anymore, buying secondhand clothes, they're not going to markets. So what's happened is a massive buildup in the West. So in fact, all of those recycled clothes containers right now, they aren't being shipped anywhere. They're basically being kept in Ireland and elsewhere in the world. And in fact, the Chinese were taken up until maybe last year sometime, they were taking all of the excess, they were taking an awful lot of the world's waste, as you know. They turned around and they basically decided no. So about a year ago, they said no, they weren't going to take any more of that waste. So I think it's going to be, we in the EU we're going to have to deal with this problem ourselves. Mm. We can't just keep shipping it elsewhere. No. It's coming back to us now. And so there's even more incentive, and hopefully there'll be maybe government funding and just cultural.
Yeah. Mentality, isn't it? Yeah.
Mentality. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
About, you know, come here. We Ballycocavan's come up a good few times this evening. And I'm drinking actually a pint of, the Clancy Cans number 3.
Oh, unbelievable.
Stout.
Tiramisu,
it's a big favourite, I have to say. I like the Walnut Whip Stout as well, but big fan of the Tiramisu Stout. And I was thinking, DJ, and Owen, of course, what about if we give out a t-shirt with Clancy Cans number 3 printed on it to one of your listeners? And I was thinking maybe maybe mention it on social media, but maybe if anybody's listening, if people are listening and they subtly comment with that, maybe hashtag shop local or something, And maybe in a week's time, I'll see who's there, and I'll promote it yourself if you like. I don't mind.
No, that's a brilliant. That's a way better idea. T-shirt. I love that idea. I love that idea. Only the listeners, only those who are clued in.
Yeah. The real fans.
So anybody who replies to this podcast being put out on Twitter, when we tweet the link out on Twitter, and anybody who replies with hashtag shop local is in with a chance of winning a Ballycacavan t-shirt from Craft Beer Tees. I think, Shane, do you know what I think that is? That's the perfect way to end the podcast, so we can get on with drinking beer and having cracked that we can record it. That's a brilliant offer. Thank you so much. I really can't wait to get my few bits off. Yeah, I'm more than happy to wait for them, because I'm fully supportive of the sustainable way that they're being produced. This, for me, like anybody that follows me in social media or that listens to this podcast long term knows that I am an absolute eco-socialist. So, like, for me, this has been one of the most fascinating and insightful conversations I've had in a long time. And to be able to do it over a couple of Ballycacavan beers, shout out actually to Trouble Brewing. I had, when I finished the Long Meadow IPA, I went on to the Trouble Brewing Vietnam, which is phenomenal. Shout out to Trouble Brewing. It's been a blast. Shane, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Owen, thanks for picking up the slack when my internet's kind of falling off a bit. And I want to say, you know that we're on the Patreon, www.patreon.com/snugcast. We're Snugcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. If you want to follow us and there, engage with us, tweet hashtag shop local to this podcast episode to be in a chance to win a very sustainable, long-lasting t-shirt that you won't regret. And Shane, any parting words for the listeners of this episode?
Well, firstly, thanks very much for having me on. You're a pair of legends, and just great to have a chat, good bit of chat with like-minded people. For the listeners, I would say, hopefully they've obviously listened in. There's a lot of this has been about community, and you know, we're kind of somewhat in this together. We're a growing industry, and what I would say is to the listener is the power is in your hands. And what I mean by that is find subtle ways to tell people about craft beers you love, slip it into conversation, put it up on social media, tweet something you're drinking, whatever it is, and just that's how we grow that market share to, you know, the kind of US and beyond, a future world with no mass produced muck, just quality. That's what Brilliant. I dream of, and us three, all of your other guests you've had on and your listeners, that's the people to get us there, so let's do it.
Fucking, there's part
I just want to say, like, yeah, Shane, I tell you, before we stop recording, I'm looking forward to the other side of the pandemic when we get to have these conversations on high stool over an actual pint. And that's been this week's podcast. It's been an absolute blast, and we're going to have a couple of cans now and get a deeper dive into these conversations. Sláinte liom Blair, Tor Lara.
Good luck.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.